the Sabbath, they were watching him closely. When he noticed how the guests chose their places of honor, he told them a parable. When you're invited by someone to a wedding banquet, do not sit down at the place of honor in case someone more distinguished than you has been invited by your host. And the host who invited both of you may come and say to you, "Give this person your place." And then, in disgrace, you would start to take a lower place. But when you're invited, go and sit down at the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, "Friend, move up higher." Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at the table with you. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. He said also to the one who had invited him, "When you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, in case they may invite you in return and you would be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you. For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
You may be seated. I was going to invite the children, but some of you are a little older than children by a little bit. Yeah, I know some of you are insulted by that thought. Over the years, I've taught a large number of Bible classes. We're getting ready to do the book of Acts in a couple of weeks. But I've also taught a couple of series. One was the Bethel Bible Series, which is a really intense Bible study aimed at pastors teaching a small group within the congregation who really study intensely. There's a lot of memory work and a lot of homework involved. But those that the pastor teaches are expected then to go out and gather among from the congregation classes for themselves, so that they can teach all, the whole congregation can be taught that way. It kind of spreads. The other one that you've used here, and I think is really a fantastically excellent program, is Crossways. I would highly recommend every few years starting a new program of Crossways. Those who have been through it will tell you it really gives you a good background of what's in the Bible. One of the things that Harry Wendt, the author of Crossways, says again and again is that the Bible is the cradle in which the Christ child is found. And he points out that from the beginning in Genesis all the way through Revelation, you can find Jesus. You can find the Christ. In fact, John 1:1, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God," declares the whole thing. God has always been with us. God has been from the beginning of time and will be at the end of time. The same yesterday, today, and forever, as the writer of Hebrews puts it. Some years ago, you know, I wondered how many people really, really study the life of Jesus. Because when you look at what Jesus does in the Gospels, if you really pay attention, some of it can be a little bit embarrassing, can it? I mean, think about it. Look at the people he talked to. The poor, the homeless, the heretics, the prostitutes, the tax collectors, all of the riffraff of society. And then, if that isn't bad enough, he goes to places like Tyre and Sidon, which is probably about as pagan a place as you could possibly go, and he even preaches to them, and he teaches them, and he heals them, and he forgives them. Wow. And among the others he goes to are the Samaritans. They are the pinnacle of heresy for any good Jew. Amazing what Jesus does. There's a book by Charles Sheldon. It was popular back in the 50s and 60s, I believe, called In His Steps. I was going to check to see if we have it in the library here. If we don't, we should have. In His Steps was written about an incident that happened in a church, and I don't even know where it was. But in this church, the pastor ended up challenging the whole congregation to walk in Jesus' steps. In other words, to make all of their decisions based on what would Jesus do. And the problem that arose for some people, and a large number of people joined a group who made that commitment to walk where Jesus walked. The newspaper editor was one of those who chose to do that, but his problem came when he looked at those who were advertising in his paper. And he had to ask himself, would Jesus advertise for liquor or cigarettes? Now, this is back in the 60s, 70s, 50s and 60s. Would Jesus advertise for some of those things? A businessman who was known to be a little bit shady began to have to rethink his thinking. Would Jesus be dishonest about the things I put in these contracts? Would Jesus do this to somebody else? A teacher decided she was going to be part of this, but it didn't take long for her to realize that she was not treating all of her students as Jesus would treat them. My, think about it. What would Jesus do? Could you take that pledge? Would you take that pledge? Because that's what we're called to do. You know, at the back of the church, back on the door back there, did anybody ever notice there's a sign that says Servants' Entrance? Now, most of us look at that as the exit, because there's an exit sign there too. But what we don't realize is that the servant's entrance is our entrance into the world as Jesus' people. As people who claim that we're going to walk in the steps of Jesus and go where Jesus wants us to go. Wow. It's amazing. Jesus, over and over again, teaches his disciples how to walk in his steps. Thomas was one of those who did. Thomas, according to tradition, was a missionary to India. There's a book called The Syrian Gospel of Thomas. It's one of those extra-canonical books. I like using that word. Isn't that beautiful? Extra-canonical, but it makes me sound like I know what I'm talking about. Actually, what it is a book that didn't make it into our Bible. How's that? Plain and simple. But in that book, there's a tradition that says that Thomas was a great carpenter and architect. And that when he went to India, he went not going around to, because it was a completely pagan land at that point. He didn't go actually to set up a church or anything of that nature. He went as an architect and a builder, hoping that his influence, as he walked with Jesus, Jesus would walk with him and would change the nature of people. The king recognized that he had such quality work, according to this tradition, that he wanted Thomas to build him a palace. Thomas said, yes, he would. And the king said, great, you can work on this all through the winter, and then next summer I'll have a palace to live in. According to the tradition, Thomas went about all the villages of that kingdom, sharing good news and healing and helping people who are in need using the king's money. So that when the king came back, he was looking around to see where his palace was. And he asked Thomas, when can I see my palace? And Thomas said, you can't see it in this life, but in the life to come, you will see a palace more glorious and beautiful than you can ever imagine. Jesus calls us to be like Thomas, to take those steps of faith, to lead us where Jesus would lead us, to go to those people who need Jesus, to lead us in a way that is according to God's plan. Paul tells us in Philippians that Jesus did not think equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself and became obedient even unto death, death on a cross. You know, Jesus could easily have had a whole chain of bakeries if he had just turned some stones in the wilderness into bread. Jesus could have ridden into Jerusalem on a beautiful white stallion and proclaimed himself to be king. But he chose instead to ride on a humble donkey. Jesus could have called down a legion of angels to protect him from those who were hitting him and beating him, beating the skin off his back and nailing him to a cross. He could have. But he chose instead to die for you and me. As sinful as we are, that was his choice. So that we would know that we had a resurrection like his also. So, are you ready to walk in Jesus' steps? Wow. Jesus gives us an indication of what that means through his own life, his own death, his own resurrection. I wonder sometimes if the church gets misled by thinking that we are a country club, that we don't have to follow where Jesus walks, that Jesus calls us to do things we don't feel comfortable doing. Isn't that amazing how that happens? And yet, that's what Jesus calls us for. Why do you come to worship? Think about that. Very seriously. A wise pastor I know recently told me that he moved to a different congregation. And one of the members of this previous congregation came to visit and said, you know, our church is just not the same without you. I miss you so much. I hardly ever go to worship anymore. And he said, what he responded was, if you are coming to worship because of me, you're coming for the wrong reason. Why are we here? We have come to worship Christ the King, Christ the Lord, who calls us out of darkness into his light. And if you know the song, sing it with me. We have come into this house and gathered in his name to worship him. We have come into this house and gathered in his name to worship him. We have come into this house and gathered in his name to worship Christ the Lord. Christ the Lord.
up holy hands and magnify his name and worship him. Let us lift up holy hands and magnify his name and worship Christ the Lord. Worship him, Christ the Lord.
The whole point is, that's who we come to worship. And when we come to worship Him, we come to learn what it means to walk in His steps. And He doesn't expect us to go charging out like we knew everything there was or knew exactly how we needed to do it. He tells us to take it one step at a time. Remember the movie Titanic? Anybody see that? If you've seen the movie Titanic, there's a character in there by the name of Jack. Jack is a stowaway, but he meets this nice girl. Of course, there had to be some romance in there. And she invites him to a banquet. And when he sits down, he is shocked because there before him are umpteen pieces of silverware. And he has no clue. He grew up in a poor family where, you know, if they had a fork, they were happy. He didn't know what to do with all this. And so he asked her, and she said, "Work your way in. Start at the ends and work your way in." Well, that's what Jesus tells us. He doesn't tell us to become the greatest saint in the world overnight. But he takes us on the journey that says, take one small step at a time. God has called us to an incredible opportunity to be His people in the world. We call ourselves the body of Christ. Now, may we learn to walk in His steps as Jesus helps us walk in our steps. I met a man in Roswell who was part of one of the singing groups that I belonged to. His name was Jack. Jack, I don't know how he got started doing it, but he loved to sing. And he used to go to the prison once a week and lead singing for the prisoners there. Someone asked him if he wasn't a little bit afraid, you know, because these were noted criminals. And he says, "Well, a little at first, but not really." He said, "When I was 6 years old, I fell into a well. And it took 3 days for them to find me and get me out. And during that time, I cried and I was afraid. And then I began to pray. And I sang songs that I learned in Sunday school." And he said, "Jesus came and sang with me, and I've never been afraid since." May we all realize that Jesus gives Himself to us right here, today, where the Word is preached, where His sacrament is shared. "This is my body, this is my blood. I'm in you, and I will live through you." You don't need to be afraid. So take each small step so that you can walk in His steps. Amen.